The Soundtrack Show will begin in 5, 4, 3.
And now, part two of our interview with songwriters Robert Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez. This is The Soundtrack Show. Back to The Soundtrack Show. I'm your host, David W. Collins, and this episode features the second half of my interview with Broadway, TV, and movie songwriters and composers, Robert and Kristen Anderson Lopez. In this episode, we discuss their influences for their Oscar-winning song, Remember Me, from the Disney-Pixar movie, Coco. We chat about their musical influences growing up, what it's like for them to collaborate with some of the greatest musicians in the world, and where they see their already stellar careers going next. Here is part two of our interview.
Remember me, though I have to say goodbye, remember me. Don't let it make you cry, for even if I'm far away, I hold you in my heart. I sing a secret song to you each night we are apart. Remember me, though I have to travel far, remember me. Each time you hear a sad guitar, know that I'm with you the only way that I can be. Until you're in my arms again, remember me.
I loved Coco, just totally switching it up, because you mentioned you were writing them at the same time. How do you balance multiple projects like that? I mean, are you able to just kind of switch gears to go, okay, well, now I'm working on Coco and now I'm working on Frozen? Do they ever kind of leak over or inspire each other?
I think, that's one area that we, I think, could learn to get better at. We have a hard time juggling multiple projects at once, because I think what you want to do is put your heart and soul into one thing. And as we work together as a couple, there's only so many hours in the day, and it's nice to, you know, as we said, throw yourself into one thing and get it right. Whereas when you have three movies and, you know, you have to constantly kind of, you're never living, breathing, and eating and sleeping one thing.
I'll agree with that. The litmus test I give myself is when I go into the shower, that's some of the best times I have to be creative and think big picture, or think about a lyric and what a lyric should be. And that shower time is super valuable for my best thinking. And if my shower time is...
Well, there's a lot of it.
I do stay a little... I still... And I'm not in California, so I know California, you can't take long showers out there
very much anymore.
But on the East Coast, it's not a big problem. And if I find that I'm working on too many things, then I don't go into that shower thinking. And we really do need to go into the shower thinking to write the best songs.
Well, I thought Remember Me was so unique and wonderful. And one of the things that struck me about it was how many different styles it worked in. You know, it worked as the kind of slow ballad, the very touching number towards the end. But then it had this big flash at the top. Do you go in writing a melody thinking, okay, well, this needs to survive a lot of different arrangements? Or do you just go, I'm going to write a great song that works with this movie?
Can I brag on my husband
yes.
for 2 seconds? Because I do think that Bobby is one of the best melodists of our generation. I do really think, like, his understanding of melody, there are wonderful, wonderful people out there working, but Bobby is at the top. I think that why this song works in so many different genres is that it's a strong melody. It just keeps building. It keeps going. And he's always very aware of not using the top note until you deserve it. I watch how he thinks, and he makes choices that make sure that the mountainscape is built correctly, so that just when you need to reach the peak is when you reach the peak and not before. And I think that's why it can transcend so many genres.
Yeah, and just to take, thank you. That's really nice. I definitely try to.
Sorry, there's an ambulance. Can you hear that one?
Oh, I was going to say they found you.
I don't know how, but they found me. I'm going to have to go away for a while, honey.
Remember me, though I have to travel far. Remember me, each time you hear a sad guitar. Know that I'm with you, the only way that I can be. Until you're in my arms again.
Now for a brief intermission. We return now to the Soundtrack Show.
It is true, you do have a way of kind of doing this melodic painting with words, you know. If you do like a minor modal borrowing or something, you know, it usually happens when there's sort of a darker thought, like in Remember Me, you know, though time may have passed. I forget the words, of course, right when I'm talking to you guys. But it gets, that's kind of, kind of when it'll dip into sort of a maybe more of a minor chord, and then it'll kind of rise and fall. What comes first? Are you basically altering the melody to lyrics that you've generated, or vice versa?
So with Remember Me, we went to Pixar. We were so just thrilled to be there. And Lee Unkrich, who is the director of Coco, pitched the story to us, which had already involved the song, and said, okay, so when we first hear the song, it's this mariachi fun number, him saying goodnight to the ladies. And we hear the song and we know that it's a big hit, and it's been a big hit in Mexico. And then the story develops, and the boy goes to the land of the dead, and he meets this guy who he realizes as time goes on that this guy is the true author of this song, and that not only that, but it's his great-great-grandfather, and the song has been misinterpreted by the first musician, and that it's not this love song. It's really a song that was a lullaby for his daughter, who was our hero's great grandmother. And and so just that pitch, and then he comes back from the land of the dead and sings it to the great grandmother, and that saves the day. And that pitch, I didn't do it very well just now, but that pitch had us in tears, and we thought, oh my God, that is a device like no other I've ever heard of a song in a movie. The song being the actual MacGuffin of this movie. And wow. So it's in disguise when you first hear it. And we were just, you know, it's such an emotional idea, and it just seemed so perfect. So what we had this title of Remember Me, they had that too. And so we just let that brew for a while. We, you know, did a lot of research on Mexico and Mexican music and the Day of the Dead. And one day I sat down at the piano and started noodling and played this tune for Kristen, and she said, let me get that on tape. And she had a meeting in town that day, and she wrote this lyric. It just kind of came out perfectly in one train trip from Brooklyn to Manhattan and came back. We put them together, and we realized that not only did it work for the lullaby, which was we decided to treat as the main prime, like, original version of it, but it worked for the mariachi as well. So we wanted to make sure that it worked in both ways, and we submitted two demos at once, the mariachi and the lullaby.
So I will say, this is another song that's a great example of taking something personal and throwing it into the song, which is, as I mentioned earlier in our interview, one of the hardest things about our collaboration is when we have to travel to L.A., it means that we have to leave our girls who are school age here in New York. And we have all kinds of rules. We try never to go more than 3 nights, because after that, our kids will come back and they'll be in war with us. That'll last like 2 weeks, because it's just not good to leave them for so long. And I feel guilty about it every time we go. And it's not like I'm leaving a spouse behind and traveling. It's we are a single parent,
right,
and we are working together.
Yep.
And we luckily have amazing babysitters, including I have 2 sisters who come. But I really threw all that parental guilt in of a songwriter who has to travel for work into this lullaby. Basically thinking of it as a lullaby I would sing to our own daughters when we the night before we have to leave for LA for 3 days.
Wow.
So it applied to us as parents and as songwriters. We couldn't believe there was going to be a movie that whose plot hinged on, well, who was the actual writer of this song?
Who wrote the actual lyric? Wow.
And did they write it for their child? It was like, it couldn't have been more perfect.
That, I have to confess, that makes me kind of emotional, because I'm going through something similar traveling through work, and I have very similar emotions, and it just adds a whole nother layer to that song for me. So that's, thank you for sharing that. Actually, that's an incredible story, and it just goes to show again, and it's something I talk about a lot, you know, not just on the last podcast, but on the Soundtrack Show, which is that, you know, this kind of art comes from people with real lives and real stories and real challenges. And I feel like the story of sorry to wax philosophical here in the middle of the interview, but the story behind what's going on in your lives is just as much a part of that creation as the creation itself. I just think it's so interesting. And thanks for sharing that. That's really great.
Oh, you're welcome. Bobby always talks about, because there, anytime that I'm like, oh, I'm so jealous sometimes of these writers who don't have kids, who can take 5 projects and go all over the world. And that's when Bobby likes to remind me that my writing, my career took off, but I think it's because my writing got so much better once I was a mother. And time writing was time away from my children, so I better make that time count. And I also think becoming a mother gave me this lens of I am in charge of raising 2 human beings to be the best humans they can be. So it gave me this lens through which I look at the world, which is every character is struggling to be a good human being. Every character is struggling in their life and making choices. And I look at it almost like I'm the mother of each one of these characters. I think becoming a parent made me the writer that I am.
Well, and it sounds like, Frozen and Coco are both huge parts of your parenting legacy. I mean, you're fueling I'm serious. I mean, you're fueling those experiences into your art, both with Anna and Elsa's relationship. And of course, being away from your daughters writing, Remember Me, it seems like a pretty clear connection there.
Yeah. Luckily, when our kids have a question or a problem at school, we can just refer them back to the movies.
See Frozen, scene 7.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you have math. You need help with your math homework? Just here's a Blu-ray and yeah, no. Yeah. If only it were that simple. Well, I wanted to ask you, you obviously are, as songwriters, work with so many other talented musicians. You've obviously worked with Michael Giacchino and Coco and Christoph Beck and Frozen, the musical arrangers on Frozen Broadway. What are those experiences like when you hear your music sort of taken over by an arranger, or when your melodic material is written into a film score?
Yeah.
Bobby's going to have fun with this one, because I mean, me too, but I think when Bobby gets going on the ecstasy of his collaboration with both Giacchino and Dave Metzger, especially, and Stephen Oremus.
Oh yeah. Well, we're lucky. We always seem to get to work with the best, and we benefit from that. And we always have just the best time working with not only, you know, arrangers and other composers, but the musicians we get to work with, the players and the performers and singers. But yeah, I mean, our closest relationship in Hollywood musically is definitely with this guy, Dave Metzger, who is an orchestrator and a film composer on his own, but I think he tends to work with other film composers as an orchestrator and as a sort of co-composer. He's a fantastic guy to get to work with, and what he does to our songs really enlivens them and just brings them to this powerful life in a way that I could never do, because I just don't have that knack for orchestration. You know, as a Broadway artist, you
tend to... The awareness of like, where is the sweet spot for the bassoon?
Yeah, that's a whole other art form. And as a songwriter, you kind of cover the basics on the piano, and then sometimes you fill in a demo with guitar or even some light strings or whatever you have. But you don't spend your time worrying about the details of horn versus trombone or glockenspiel versus celesta. And it's amazing but I'm super, obviously I'm really intrigued by that world and love to get a peek into it. And so every time someone orchestrates our work, I sort of fall in love with it all over again and just love dissecting the process and also getting to influence it by saying, here's where we were going for this bar. Maybe there's a different choice we can make. And kind of getting my hands dirty that way too.
And I will say, and with both Frozen and Coco, we were so grateful to have collaborators on the score side that weren't afraid to incorporate and collaborate with us so that the score led into the songs in a great way and stole and also inspired choices that we made. I feel like in a musical movie, you really do want the score to feel feel unified with the songs that are coming out of them.
Yeah, like when we did Winnie the Pooh, which was our very first film.
Are you going to say something negative?
No.
Okay, good.
When we did Winnie the Pooh, we didn't ever really get to meet the film composer, Henry Jackman, and he decided he didn't want to use our themes. And I think it worked just fine, and it was it kind of was what it was, and it worked great. It didn't really need our themes didn't need to become themes in the soundtrack because it really wasn't a musical. The themes that needed to get worked in were the Sherman Brothers themes.
Right, that's true.
But in Frozen, we had Christoph Beck, and he really of his own accord, and it doesn't really benefit him, except it does. I think it does benefit him. A musical movie, he made it his business to take the themes and integrate them into the score. One of my favorite cues in Frozen, it happens right after Do You Want to Build a Snowman? And it's sort of like 3 years later in Arendelle, and he takes the music from Frozen Heart and transposes it into a major setting with some really interesting borrowed notes. Yeah, but it's in a major key.
It's in a major key.
It's this beautiful, and it sounds like ships coming in, pulling in, and it's an awesome cue. And when I heard it, I was like, yeah, we got in there.
It's like some sort of Nordic sea shanty kind of like
totally.
Melody. Yeah, that's really interesting. And you know, from people watching in the audience, there's not a distinction made there. You know, it's all just presented to them as one flowing piece of music.
Born of cold and winter air and mountain rain combining, this icy force, both foul and fair, has a frozen harbor lining.
Watch your step, please. The gates will be opening soon.
Why do I have to wear this?
Because the queen has come of age. It's coronation day.
That's not my fault.
The Soundtrack Show will continue in a moment. And now, back to the Soundtrack Show.
But I was just curious, you know, speaking of being in the audience, if you had musicals, movie or Broadway or otherwise, musical influences that you remember so well from when you were younger that made you decide to get into this crazy business? Was there that moment where you remember seeing something? I mean, obviously, you know, Bobby, you and I have talked about Star Wars, but, you know, was it Sondheim? Was it The Wizard of Oz or old MGM musicals? Was it something else? Anything come to mind?
I think with both of us, because the musical bug hit us both so early, I would have to say there are probably 25 to 40 cast albums that I just fed myself a diet of for my entire childhood. You know, everything from Oklahoma to Guys and Dolls to Chicago to Annie to Peter Pan. The Peter and the Wolf was sort of a classical, and the Nutcracker, and that kind of show very early. And then I was obsessed with Andrew Lloyd Webber. Uh-huh. Obsessed. And I think Tim Rice's lyrics on Evita, a lot of the things I was very obsessed with had Tim Rice as lyricist. That's another one. And then Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty. Lynn Ahrens was one of the first female lyricists. And I went, oh, women do this. And now we continue to. We listen to the Broadway XM channel all the time to just keep that steady diet of people using music to tell stories.
Yeah, for me, I guess, I mean, Star Wars was the first movie I ever saw. And I had the record that had not only the soundtrack, but the dialogue too. So I just listened to the story over and over again with the music. It was records. We didn't have a VCR. So I had the Jungle Book record. I had the Hobbit. These were like my very earliest things.
We both had the same Sesame Street album that we were both obsessed
with. At Home
with
Ernie and Bert.
And Free to Be You and Me.
Free to Be You and Me.
And Really Rosie also.
Yep.
Seminal works to me.
And Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh,
Your
yeah.
Imagination. That was a great one. And I guess in the end, what really did it was being in West Side Story in fifth grade, it was Sondheim for me. It was like, that was the thing that then pushed me off. Like, this could be, these things aren't just for kids. These are grown-up, sophisticated expressions of drama that you can really bring with you into adulthood. And, that's what did it.
I also would lie if I didn't tell you that 80s commercials didn't play a huge part in my musical language. I dare you to name a product in the 80s that had a jingle that I don't know. Somehow the 80s jingles really infected my soul.
That's another podcast.
No, it's so true. It's so true. It's like they just all had the most catchy theme songs.
Even the Army.
I wanna grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. I mean, they're all really good.
Yeah. I mean, even the Army had a jingle.
That's right.
That's right.
Be all that you can be.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, and your best rock tenor. That's great.
And it's funny. I think a lot of the musical theater writers were writing some of those jingles, and Barry Manilow was writing those jingles. Lynn Ahrens wrote.
What would you do?
Another one we know wrote by Menon.
Right.
I might have gotten into that business if it hadn't collapsed as soon as I graduated college.
Right.
I thought about it.
Right.
I wanted to. I would have loved to make some money doing that.
Me too. I did audition for a job with My Little Star Baby.
Oh, yes. My Little Star Baby.
Where you could buy a doll that would also register a star. And I think someone took that idea, but they did not use my jingle.
Mm-hmm. Well, this actually relates to my last question for you, which is, you know, you've both accomplished so much already, but are there mediums or projects that are like dream projects for you that you haven't done yet that you really want to? Maybe jingle writing's one of them. You still want to crack that nut?
Yeah, we'd like to business. Make a product and write that jingle just so we can write a jingle.
Just so you can write the jingle. But are there projects that you think, oh man, I really want to write something for, you know, oh gosh, I don't know, anything?
I don't know. We're having those conversations right now.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid to, like, just yesterday I had an idea that I was really excited about, but I'm afraid to say on your podcast because I don't want anyone else to do it.
But one thing that we've noticed is that, you know, the world is changing right now, and what we seem to be watching are always in this form of like 8 episodes, an hour long each, and we binge watch them all at once. And it seems like, you know, someone should do a musical of one of those, and at some point we'd love to do one.
We have one of those that we're talking about with someone.
We do. Yes.
So that seems really fun. I think Bobby and I also have a director's bug.
Well, Kristen for sure. Kristen could have directed, you know, anything. She's such a good communicator and works well, so well with actors, and has a really good top-down vision of the whole thing that evades me very often. I'm always like, what are we doing again? What's the point of this? The thing that I kind of harbor, if we were to ever not do the same project again, is I'd like to write a film score.
Bobby wants to write a film score.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I don't know if I could,
and I'm not sure if I should, but I'd like to try.
He scores a lot of the boards sometimes for screenings, and I think you could.
Absolutely, and you know, all the great, I should say, so many of the most memorable film scores, those composers were armed with orchestrators and had their own assembly line of really talented people, especially because just like, you know, the time pressure that you had writing the Broadway version, there are extreme time pressures in film scoring. So I would
sign me up.
Yeah, I would sign me up to hear a Robert Lopez pen film score, and I would love to hear that.
Yeah, again, that's how family dictates those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to dream it, but then when you say, "Oh, go to LA and write a score for 3 months with 2 children."
Yeah,
it's a whole different thing. So there will be a whole new chapter when our kids are out of the house and in college before they move back into our house.
And between now and then, it sounds like you have plenty to keep you occupied. Well, I just wanted to say again, thank you so much for doing this interview, and congratulations on all your success and your awards. And I just can't wait to hear what you do next.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your good questions.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for saving Frozen Broadway with your podcast.
Yes, and thank you for the new podcast. I love it.